My idea, it wasn't as fleshed out, I think. We obviously fleshed it out once I presented it that night. But it was more of just an ambition, really.
Okay, hello, hello everybody. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix, and welcome to the DataPack Podcast. Episode 4, I believe.
It is episode 4. Pretty cool. So, today we are talking about a recent DataPack jam we took part in. So I think we mentioned the DataPack jam before in like our first episode, 'cause we were talking a bit about Code of Copper, right? But yeah, basically, for any of you that don't know, it's like a game jam, but for datapacks. So you have some sort of theme, and you have a limited amount of time. In this case, it was just over a week, to make a datapack around that theme. But this, well, normally it's like a text prompt, like some sort of, either a word or like a short phrase or something like that that can be interpreted in different ways. But this time it was a bit different. The theme was an image, which definitely posed like a sort of a more interesting challenge, I think.
We'll put the image up on screen for anyone that's on YouTube. But yeah, that's I think I've done, I don't know, maybe three or four DataPack jams now, maybe even five. And that was the first time that I obviously there's been an image jam. And yeah, there was definitely some challenges that came with that you don't get from just a text prompt.
For anyone who isn't on YouTube or is just listening audio only, if you look up Two Harlequins by Salvador Dali, that was the image. So yeah, I mean, painter, right? So it's quite an interesting image, right? It's got some interesting element, and basically it's like this barren desert landscape, these two pillars with statues on top, essentially standing in the middle of this big desert, and then sort of in the distance there's this sort of temple that's barely visible, and also there's like sort of various people, characters, around the place, doing a couple different things. We had to essentially interpret the image, and sort of decide what we were going to make in a data pack related to that image, right? It's quite an interesting thing because, as the saying goes, a picture speaks 1,000 words. So yeah, there's like lots of different interpretations to it and different ways we could have approached it. But I guess let's talk about the ideas that we had, right?
So, when we first when the theme was announced, we were in a voice call together, and we there was a little bit of confusion at first, but we eventually and the theme was a little bit late, but once we got the image, we did a little bit of a brainstorming and kind of worked out what the ways in which we interpreted the image. And one of the things we noticed pretty early on in the image, and if you've looked at the image, you may have noticed it as well, is that there's this tiny palace off in the distance, or temple, or something, some structure off in the distance, that the whole picture is pretty much drawing you towards. There's these big leading lines on the floor, all pointing towards this palace in the distance. And so one interpretation we had was basically this was a goal, right? And almost what did we call it? It was an unattainable goal was one of the one of the interpretations we had of the image. And there's some other elements as well. There's like, there's a lot of people doing activities around. So there was this theme of like athleticism. And yeah, Gears, do you have some other themes?
To me, at least, it felt like the sort of remains of an old civilization, right? That's now lost to time. New statues are like, they look sort of like Roman statues or something. So, they make me think of like some ancient civilization which was like once rich and prosperous, but now has been lost to time and decayed, sort of, and that's all that's left of it.
Yeah.
And then also there's this sort of theme of like duality with the two Harlequins.
Yeah.
We came up with a couple of ideas. And one thing we also wanted to do, right, is sort of since it's Minecraft's 15th anniversary around this time, we wanted to have some sort of tribute to that, right? So we sort of decided to extend the end credit sequence, which is, you know, it's the thing that you see when you go through the end portal for the very first time in a world. It's got those two sort of entities which are talking about they're talking about the player, right? And they're explaining certain things and just having an interesting conversation. So what we did was we basically created a fake version of that sequence and played it instead of the real version, and then we like interrupted it halfway through and brought you to a different place. So for our sort of Minecraft anniversary thing, right, we sort of had these different like islands representing different versions of Minecraft. We had one for Minecraft Classic, one for beta and alpha, and one for like what we called the release era, which was like 1.0 to like 1.12, I guess. And then there was the modern one. I really enjoyed that, sort of getting to like recreate and revisit those older versions. It was quite an interesting thing to do, I found.
So should we go over a little bit of what we did for each of the islands?
So I guess let's just start. So we basically decided that we were just going to allocate two, because there was four islands in total, we were going to allocate two islands each and just sort of build those. Because obviously, we were talking a bit in the last podcast about how we do a lot of pair programming, which is where we basically both sit in a voice call together and we both work on the same thing.
Yeah.
Which has a lot of benefits, because, you know, both of us get to like review the code, and often if one person is having difficulty figuring out how to solve a problem, then the other person might have the solution, or you can often I find it much easier to spot bugs in code that other people have written than code that I've written, because when you're writing it, you know, you're just writing it as you think it should be, and if there's a logic in your sorry if there's an error in your logic, then you might not spot it, but somebody else might spot it.
Yeah.
But obviously the disadvantage to that is that it's quite a bit slower, because we got to be working on it at the same time, and obviously for something time limited like this jam, we definitely couldn't do that. So we split the tasks up in half, more or less, right? We had one two islands each, and then we started building them.
Yeah. So yeah, Gears, you had the classic island, right? And the modern island.
And the modern one.
So should we go through
Right.
them in order, like release order?
Yeah, let's do that. So, yeah, to start off with, what I did is I just opened up Minecraft Classic, because, by the way, if you didn't know, you can still play Minecraft Classic in the browser at classic.minecraft.net. So, anyway, I opened up Minecraft Classic and I took a look at the blocks that existed back then. I took a look at the terrain generation, and I basically started copying that into a Minecraft world. I just started building, and yeah, I just sort of built what I felt like seemed to match the classic terrain, and yeah, I just sort of wanted to get a feeling for what that was like, because I will say that when we started this data pack, like when you first had the idea, I really wasn't that sure on how we were going to execute this, because it's quite different from any data pack we or I at least have done before. Right? It's like sort of a it's
It's very experimental almost.
yeah.
It's like I mean, we're basically trying to do what you would normally accomplish in a world in a data pack. So
Right. So yeah, first of all, it's more like a map, right? There's set structures that generate in the world. And also it's not like right, yeah. So and also like a data pack is usually just something you sort of add on to your world, and it just adds some sort of extra experience in from either extra items or like extra mobs or something that sort of changes the way you play, right? But this one was more like sort of this little one-time experience thing in your world, right? Which we sort of equated somewhat to like a cutscene in a game. So yeah, that was definitely I definitely found it challenging at first to wrap my head around, or just to get ideas and motivation to work on stuff.
That's something I really struggled with as well. I think possibly even more than you did, 'cause I didn't finish my islands until pretty much the last day.
Yeah, which I'm actually surprised by, because it was your idea sort of to do this whole thing in the first place. Like when you suggested it, I sort of like, I'm not sure. Is that gonna be good? Is that gonna work? Is that gonna fit? But I went with it because it was different, and it was, I always find it interesting to try something. Put yourself a bit out of your comfort zone and try something you haven't really tried before. Because you'll probably learn something. But yeah, so then I sort of, but yeah, it took me a while, let's say, to get into like the flow of the thing, right? But what I sort of did is, I just basically said, you know what? Because here's the thing, I find working on data packs like this on a jam, well, there's a certain that there's advantages and disadvantages, right? One of the main advantages is that I feel like I have a lot more motivation to do them, for a couple of reasons. First of all, the time is limited, right? So you know that you've got to get this done in time, otherwise, yeah, there's no point in doing it in the first place, right? The other thing is when I'm working with someone else, I find like when I'm working on a data pack by myself with no time limit, it's just like, yeah, okay, nobody else even knows or cares about this until I release it, so I can just take as much time as I want. And if I ever decide, eh, I'm not feeling this that well, or if I'm not feeling this that much, or I don't know, it's not, I'm not getting into the flow of this data pack, I can just say, you know what, screw it, I just stop, I just never touch it again. But with the jam data pack, it's like two things. First of all, if I'm going to get this done, I've got to get it done in 1 week. and there's a hard time limit, and there's no, you know, even if I, one thing I tried to do a little while ago when making a data pack to give myself extra motivation was to say, you know what, I want to get this data pack done by a certain time. And yeah, I'd like to get this data pack done by a certain time from now, right? The thing is, there was nothing imposing that time limit on me, right? Nobody else cared whether I got the data pack done in time. And so basically, if I didn't get it finished by that time, I could just say, you know what, I'll do it another time.
You
Right?
just constantly delay it.
But with this, it's like, yeah, the judges aren't, I mean, you know, it the website where you submit it physically isn't going to let you submit it after this time, so you've got to get it. And yeah, working with someone else as well, I find always helps because yeah, then there's this added thing of like, I'm not the only one who knows about this data pack, right? If I don't get this thing done in time, you know, I'm basically going to be letting that other person down, right? You know, it's like they worked on it, and if I don't do my part, then I didn't do my part, right?
Yeah, there's a bit of
And that's
social
sort of my
pressure.
responsibility to do it, yeah. So I always find it sort of gives me extra motivation to work on data packs like that with other people and in a time limit. But obviously it has its drawbacks as well. Like you only get like because you have a limited time, you can't get necessarily all the things you wanted to do done.
And you can end up with something just a little rough around the edges, which,
Yeah, which definitely has been the case.
Unfortunately, with the pack we've made, the Harlequins pack, we didn't, we didn't get everything done that we would have liked to, and we didn't get time to polish it. So, unfortunately, we submitted it a little bit unpolished, which we've already read some play reports back, like some comments on the jam entry. There's definitely already been some bugs found, which is a little unfortunate, but I think we still did make something pretty cool.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun to work on it. But yeah, anyway, I sort of went a bit off topic there, because I was talking about, well, I was talking about working on the thing, right? So basically, normally, if it had been something like that, and I decided, you know what, I want to make this certain data pack with these features, right? And I'd come up with that idea. It probably would have taken me a very long time to complete it because I didn't necessarily know the best way to start, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And one thing I do find working with other people though is if your visions of the data pack don't line up perfectly, then you find it. So you came up with the idea, which meant that I wasn't completely sure of what features we were going to have and what how exactly we wanted to execute. So that's one thing I found a little hard with that. Whereas if I come up with the idea on my own, you know, it's in my head, so I can decide how I want to shape it. But I basically said, right, we have 1 week to finish this data pack. And if, well, I know, we basically said, okay, by so and so, right, we said, okay, we're going to give each other like however long it was. So it was like 2 days to work on our islands. And then we were going to come back after that time and essentially progress report and just show each other what we'd done. And I thought to myself, if it gets to that day and I haven't done the bit I said I was going to do, that is, I mean, first of all, I'm sort of like partially like ruining it for you, right? Because, you know, maybe you were probably really excited to work on this, and then if I didn't do my part, then obviously I'm sort of letting you down or whatever. And also it's just gonna slow down the whole process if I haven't got my stuff done.
Yeah.
by that. So I just said, you know what, I'm just gonna sit down, I'm gonna put on some music, because I find that always helps me concentrate and motivates me, and I'm just gonna build this thing whether I like it or not. And I'm just gonna, okay, I'm just gonna say, put 1 hour on the timer. I'm not stopping until until that hour's over. I'm
Yeah,
just gonna
yeah.
get as much of this done as I can. And I found that really helped me
Yeah.
at the beginning when I wasn't pretty sure.
Yeah, that is, in hindsight, that's probably something I should have done, because I really struggled with this one. Yeah, I guess I can explain. Yeah, it's been mentioned. Yeah, I came up with the idea. So basically, the day after the theme was announced, so it was nighttime for me when the theme was announced. But the next day, I was out. I was at a public event, but it was the kind of event where you're sitting and there's like music going on and stuff. So I had a bit of time to ruminate, I guess, on the theme. And oh well. Yeah, I had been thinking over some cool ideas that I could have, and I basically thought to there's this really cool YouTube video I saw a while back of a Geometry Dash level called Watt. And if we remember, we'll put a link to it in the description. But it's basically someone managed to recreate, well, create a whole like 3D animation as a 2D Geometry Dash level using all kinds of tricks
Yeah,
and
it's
stuff.
insane.
And I just remember thinking about that, and I was like, that's such a cool way of like showing your love for the game. And it ends with a little love heart and saying which version of the game. And in the devs video, like behind the scenes video, he explained that it was basically made on the last version of Geometry Dash before this big update that changed a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
So he basically said it was like a almost an end to an era of the game. And I thought, well, we're doing like Minecraft's in its 15th anniversary right now. It would be really cool to somehow incorporate that into the Jam project. And I thought about it, I was like, what part of Minecraft fits the like surrealist theme of this like almost end of the world, yeah, this landscape at the end of time almost, with like unattainable goals and all this stuff. And I thought to the end poem. And that's pretty much where I had the idea for this, but I guess my idea, it wasn't as fleshed out, I think. We obviously fleshed it out once I presented it that night. But it was more of just an ambition, really. And I think you mentioned that you weren't fully sure on how to, how to achieve the concept because it wasn't your idea. Well, I feel like it was my idea and I still didn't really know how to accomplish it. So yeah, I guess there's that. But yeah, I guess I can probably talk about, because, well, the original format we were having there is that we're going to talk about the different islands. I guess I can talk about my development of the Beta Island. So, to waffle on even more, the beta version of Minecraft holds a little bit of nostalgia for me, because that was the version of the game that I played when I was a little kid, like really little. And it was only a couple of times that I played it, but that's my earliest memories of the game, pretty much. So, goddamn. Sorry, there's a piglin with a fire aspect sword, and that is, whew, not nice. Yeah, so I was obviously working on the Beta Island, but it was really hard to figure out what mechanic to express in the island,
Yeah, so we
because
should just add here, as well as, yeah, creating a line that sort of mimicked the terrain generation of the time, we also wanted to add some little interaction, because initially it was going to be sort of like just an experience only, as in like the player didn't actually do anything, it was just all staged basically, but I thought it would be more interesting if the player had at least had to solve some puzzle or do some task or something. So we decided that we would have like one thing from each version to sort of rep one like task they had to complete that represents each version. So yeah, anyway, continue what you were saying.
So I really struggled figuring out what this task was going to be because I couldn't think of a clear, a clear mechanic that's distinct in beta that's not in any other part of the game that's really makes it it just makes you know this is definitely beta edition. So I finally was thinking through the things I remember about that version of the game, and the food was the first thing that came to mind. Basically, in beta, food was non-stackable, like raw pork chops. You couldn't stack them, and they were consumed instantly when you right-click them, and there was no hunger bar. It just restored hearts. So I was like, I could recreate that, and so I did. And it wasn't difficult, it wasn't too hard. But then I was left with an island full of pigs that dropped this special pork chop that you could eat. And then I was like, okay, where do I go from here? Because an island full of pigs is not very interesting. So I was stuck. I was stuck there since, and I was a complete creative block on what to turn this island into. And it
Yeah.
wasn't until the last day that
It was the last day, right? When we added the.
Gears told me about this trick he had seen somewhere of you can set the wander target NBT of a wandering trader, and that wandering trader will walk to those coordinates.
Right. Well, I was just. Can I say something else first? Well, one thing we were thinking of also to do with pigs is like riding a pig through a small gap with a carrot on a stick. But the problem is that carrot on a sticks, you could ride pigs in beta, but they couldn't. But carrot on a stick didn't exist yet, so you couldn't control them, and so we were sort of at a loss as to how to do that. And then yeah, then we came up with the idea that. Yeah, if you have a wandering trader, you can set the MBT of it to basically pathfind specific place, and you can create sort of custom things, which is something I'd seen people do before.
And that was really cool. That was something that I didn't really know about, or if I did, I'd completely forgotten, and I don't think I did know about it. But yeah, that was I spent the next, I think it took me about 3 hours to work it. Now obviously getting the wandering trader to walk to the position, that's easy. Now getting the
I don't think it
wandering
was quite 3 hours, but
I felt like 3 hours.
maybe.
It was late at night for me, and it took a while. But yeah, there was a lot of various different there was a lot of various different issues that it had that
Yeah.
had to be worked out, right? So my first instinct, okay, the wandering trader is riding the pig, right? We've now got the slash ride command.
Well, no,
So,
the first thing was the pig
oh
riding the wandering trader, right?
yeah, we
So like
tried
the wandering
first.
trader would go to places and the pig would And the pig would just ride on top of it. But that didn't work.
So then we tried, okay, when you mount the pig, have the wandering trader ride the pig as well, and then the wandering trader would tell the pig where to go. Well,
Yeah, because we realized that the reason that the wandering trader wasn't going to the place it should when the pig was on it is because
the pig was controlling the wandering trader.
the pig controls the wandering, the passenger controls the vehicle, not except if the player's riding the pig, which is the whole reason that there was a problem in the first place. But
So, the next step, try and have both the wandering trader and the player riding the pig. Now, this didn't work because the player took priority. The player was controlling the pig, and obviously, because it didn't have a carrot and stick, couldn't control the pig. And then the wandering trader, for whatever reason, just can't control it if the player's there. So that was a bust.
But then we realized that, or then you realized that if the wandering, when you got off, as soon as you got off the pig and the wandering trader was the only one on the pig, it could control the pig just fine.
So the next step, what if the player rides the wandering trader who rides the pig, right? So we intercept when the player rides the pig. We instead unmount the player from the pig and we remount them to the wandering trader, right? And so now we have this stack of a wandering trader that's riding a pig, which itself has a player riding it.
Oh, and also, we should say that if you're picturing this in your head, it doesn't. You're probably picturing the player like riding super high on top of a wandering trader. Luckily, there's the new scale attribute, which allows us to, well, allowed you to basically make the
I made the wandering trader so
make
small
the
that you could
wandering trader
barely
tiny.
notice that the player was hovering off the pig. Now, you could, if you went in F5 and you squinted hard enough, you could notice that the player wasn't exactly touching the pig.
But I
But
doubt anyone's that
yeah, no one's really
anyway.
noticing that. So that was all fun and games. However, there was one last issue. Was okay. So we've got this tiny wandering trader riding the pig. We've got the player riding that. However, if they go in F5, they can still clearly see the wandering trader there, right? Even though it's tiny, you can still see it. Which is a problem. I don't want the player to see the fact that they're riding a wandering trader, no matter how funny that is. That's not exactly the intention. So, okay, easy. We know how to do this. Summoning the
Make them
entity
invisible.
with invisibility, right? This is very standard. This is Data Pack 101. Okay, so when a wandering trader is invisible during the day, and I'm sure plenty of people listening will have experienced this in their own worlds, they drink a milk bucket to clear the invisibility,
Right,
right? Because
because they
they
drink
turn invisible at
invisibility at night
night.
to hide from the,
So that's all well and good, except it doesn't just do it once to clear its first invisibility. It does it every time that it's invisible, which means you constantly set it to be invisible, and it constantly keeps drinking its milk bucket over and over again to clear it. And so
So you just got to clear the milk bucket from its inventory every tick,
yes.
basically,
So
right?
eventually, yeah, I've got a setup. I'm clearing the milk bucket constantly, and there's a lot of work just to get this thing working. But in the end, I put the spawner down in a little mob room, spawning pigs, and
It
then
works really well.
yeah, it ends up being a
It
really
does.
cool little sequence, and it's actually really satisfying to use. But it was just so many random hacky things, which is what I love about data packs, really. It's just this process of hacking it to work is quite fun.
So I haven't actually talked about the behavior which I added to the classic island because I did it a bit later, really. But I basically, yeah, so after I'd built, I actually built the classic and the modern islands both first because I didn't have that much of an idea of what I wanted to actually do for both of them. So I just built them and then added the behavior later. But basically, there's this interesting mechanic in Classic, right? Well, you know how in Minecraft you use the right click button to place a block and left click to break a block? Well, in Classic, first of all, you're always in creative mode, so there's no limited resources, no survival mode. But also, it works differently. Basically, if you left click, by default, it will break a block. But then if you right click, it toggles into place mode and you use left click again to place the block. And also, the other thing is, when you place down sand, for example, now it sort of falls down slowly, but in Classic, it will just basically drop immediately to the bottom of where it falls in sort of kind of wacky way. So I wanted to recreate that because that was like the thing is with Classic is there's barely any game mechanics. Like it's basically just movement and
Breaking, placing blocks.
movement, breaking, placing blocks, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I basically decided I wanted to add that. I also removed sprinting because there was no sprinting in there, but it didn't really play that much of a role in the final thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I basically recreated sand from Classic, which thankfully I was able to do thanks to the new enchantment system, right? Which upcoming 1.21, which I'm sure we'll talk about when that actually releases, which actually at the time of recording, that's like a week tomorrow, so maybe the next podcast episode will be about that actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think that was a pretty cool feature. It was quite fun to implement, I'd say. And it was sort of an interesting mechanic that I added. The other thing was we not only obviously a major difference between modern Minecraft and previous versions of Minecraft is the textures, right? Classic textures were sort of very early program art, right? It was just whatever. It was just basically a test of the game to see if they could get an interesting game working from that. And so the textures were not great, let's say, for the most part.
Yeah.
So we wanted to recreate the textures from Classic as well, right? Now, if you know anything about data packs and resource packs, you know that obviously you can easily change the texture of a block with a resource pack. But the problem is that would change all blocks, and we don't want all blocks to look like Classic blocks because that would look really strange.
Yeah.
So we used a little trick, which, yeah, so there's several ways of making custom blocks in Minecraft, right? The most common one is, well, it used to be like item frames or armor stands, but now it's item displays where you have your base block and then you have an item display summoned on top of that, which has a custom texture using custom model data, because you can do custom model data for items, but not for blocks, right?
Yeah.
Now the problem with that is it's good for like small things like maybe a custom crafting table or I don't know, like a certain ore that generates in certain places. But for large scale things, it's not good because it causes quite a lot of lag, right? You have one entity per custom block, basically, which is really not very lag friendly. So there's actually another trick, which is less widely used, but basically, in Minecraft, right? You'll know. So there's this thing called block states, where a certain block can be in, yeah. Like it's the same block, but it's in a different state. So, for example, redstone has lots of different states. It has one state for the power, so yeah, how whether it's off or whether it has one signal strength or etc. etc. And then also it has a block state for each of the directions, right? Because redstone changes shape as you place other redstone around it, as you place the next component. So that is a block state of redstone. Now, another thing that has block states is slabs. So slabs have two block states. One's called type, and that controls whether it is a bottom slab, a top slab, or a double slab, which, yeah, where you have the slab placed sort of double and it forms a solid block. And the other one is called waterlogged, which, as you know, is whether the slab is waterlogged or not. Now, an interesting thing about that is that top slabs can be waterlogged, bottom slabs can be water. Double slabs can't be waterlogged. If you place a, it's a solid block, you can't waterlog it. So it's impossible to get a waterlogged double slab in the vanilla game, but you can get it with commands. You can run a set block command which has a waterlogged double slab, and you can additionally assign a different texture and model to different block states. So, you know, there's a different model for a top slab and a bottom slab and a double slab. Well, you can make a different model for the for a double waterlogged slab, and have it look whatever you want. So basically, if you don't have the resource pack for the data pack, the classic, all of the non, all the islands
Modern.
except the modern one look
Yeah.
really weird because they're all just a bunch of double slabs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was a neat trick because it doesn't cause lag because it's just they're just blocks, right?
Yeah.
The reason you don't use that in most custom blocks is, well, a couple things. First of all, whenever you break it, it drops water. There's water there, so it's just hard to detect when you're breaking it. But since the whole thing was done in adventure mode, that didn't really apply to us at all, so it was fine. But yeah, that was a cool trick that we did.
Yeah.
One thing I'll just say is that should have said this earlier, but we'll obviously leave a link to download the data pack in the description if anyone wants to play it. I highly recommend you do play it because you know, you can't describe it all with words, right? It's quite a visual data pack, right? So anyway, we'll leave a link to that. And if you don't want to play it for whatever reason, I've also recorded a video of me playing through it, and we'll post that on this channel, and leave a link to that as well. So you can take a look at that if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I just thought we'd mention how we did that. Should we move on a bit? Because we sort of talked a bit about like the development process of the islands, but should we move on to the next bit? Because yeah, I mean, we talked a bit about that already. I mean, I know we haven't touched the release or modern islands, but maybe we'll leave that for people if they want to experience that for themselves.
Yeah. What I will say is that, especially for the modern island, and after that, we've got some pretty cool effects that we did for the pack, and I would say it's well worth checking it out, even if you just watch the video. It's well worth checking it out to see that, because we came up with some pretty neat ideas, I think.
Okay, should I talk? Should we talk about the should I think let's talk about the bit after the modern island, like what happens at the end of the island, right?
Right, yeah, the city at the end of the game.
Yeah, so
Or
I
the
will
city at
just
the end of the
say,
world.
it might be better if you just play through the data pack or watch the video first,
Yeah.
and then come back and listen to this, because then you'll maybe get a better appreciation of what we're talking about and a better understanding.
Yeah.
But anyway, we came up with this idea, right? That so yeah, one thing I'll say is that with like Code of Copper, when we worked on that together, Code of Copper is the kind of thing which you can just like write out an exact definition of how everything's going to work and how the AST is going to be produced and etc. and just like write the whole thing out on paper and just follow that for the rest.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to do that with something like this because there's not that sort of very logical
Yeah.
thing of everything, right? You can't write a formal specification for something like this, right?
Yeah, it's a creative endeavor. It's there's
But yeah, basically the way we approached it was with a storyboard, right? So basically, You essentially draw like sort of a cartoon of how you're imagining it. And yeah, so obviously we haven't really talked about how we incorporated this image to our into our data pack, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, basically the idea was this. The end of the data pack would be the image of would be a Minecraft recreation of the painting, like in game, in blocks.
Yeah.
And coming back to my idea of it being of this painting being sort of like the remnants of some ancient civilization, I had the thought that we'd have like this city, or I don't remember who had this idea, but basically this city, and as you walk forwards along the street, it sort of degrades as if like you're moving forward through time. And then you're sort of left with this barren landscape and this final image. And then we had the idea, right, that this final island, the modern island, would sort of collapse and leave this staircase down to this like city where you would see the final thing.
Yeah.
And then I think yeah, so we basically yeah, so basically the way we achieved that is we had basically this trigger, which when you complete the final task of the modern island, the blocks sort of start disintegrating. So all the blocks around you turn into block displays and then float up and sort of evaporate almost, which yeah, I thought was a pretty cool effect. I liked how that came out.
Yeah, that came out really cool.
And also I really like the vibe of the staircase that gets revealed. So basically there's this like underground staircase which is made up of a few different blocks, right? It's made up of cobblestone, but there's lots of different versions of cobblestone. There's the alpha or the classic cobblestone. There's the beta cobblestone. Actually, the texture didn't change from beta all the way up to like 1.12, so
Yeah.
or 1.13.
1.14,
There was
I
that,
think,
and then there
even.
was the yeah. Well, 1.14 was when it
Yeah.
changed. Right. So then, and then there was the modern cobblestone. But also, you had this idea to have this like flashing this texture, which is animated, which is sort of like that TV static effect, like sort of glitchy colors, and it switches between the three versions, which I really like that. Yeah. So you've got this sort of underground tunnel, which as the island disintegrates, initially you can't see any trace of it at all, and then as the island disintegrates, it starts to get revealed. And yeah, you sort of see this, yeah, this tunnel under. Oh, and one of my favorite parts is this sort of transition that we do while you're in the tunnel, right? Do you want to explain that?
Like what we did inside the tunnel.
Like
Yeah.
the
Yeah, so basically the original idea of the tunnel is that it would be a seamless teleport to basically teleport the player to the next area, which is the city at the end of time, right? And so originally we had the structure for that city loaded in elsewhere, about 1,000 blocks away, right? And so the idea is when the player passes a certain point in the tunnel, we do a relative teleportation to the same spot in a matching corridor ne in that city structure, basically. Now, it worked. The only problem is that because it was loading fresh chunks, there was a flash of sky before the player was teleported, so it ended up not actually being seamless,
Yeah,
which
which was
kind
kind
of
of
broke the
annoying,
effect.
and it yeah, broke the effect, yeah.
So then I think I had the idea of basically, what if while the player's inside the tunnel, we just delete the old structures and place in the new structure at the end of the tunnel. So the player doesn't actually teleport. The world just changes around them.
Yeah.
And that ended up working. That was pretty cool.
It was a cool effect for sure. Like, there's definitely, you notice the lag because we're like, these are like max structure block size. So that's, what is it? That's 48 by 48 by 48.
Yeah.
So we've got to fill that size with air, basically.
Yeah.
Which is a little laggy.
But we split it into multiple
tunnel.
Yeah.
Yeah, we split it across multiple ticks to make it slightly less less laggy. But basically as you're going through, it removes the things, and when you come out the other side, the only thing still left there is the tunnel. Everything else is gone, and then there's this new city there, in place of it, which is quite a cool, like, yeah, you can imagine being like a little confused by that because you just walk through the tunnel and suddenly you're somewhere else. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the one thing that made the city decay, like sort of decaying over time really easy, is because there's this thing in Minecraft called, what is it called? Integrity for structures.
Yeah.
And that's used in, like, what is it used in bastions?
It's used in a lot of different structures. I believe the ancient, the ruined portals. I think the ancient city probably uses it as well. It's just used to...
Yeah, it basically randomly remove some blocks.
Yeah. It's to make it look a bit more ruined.
We just, as you walk forward, progressively replace the structure with the... we just replace the structure with another version of the structure with slightly less integrity. And so it looks like the city is sort of degrading over time.
Mm.
And we even did it in such a way that when you walk backwards, it sort of rebuilds itself. Which was a pretty cool effect.
Yeah. And the innovation there is actually... so I'd known about the integrity thing from structure placements. When you're doing world gen stuff, and world gen's a bit confusing, but when you do it, there's some processes you can apply to structures when they generate in the world. So I was originally thinking, oh yeah, we're gonna have to use that, probably pre-generate a bunch of these structures and swap them in using this system to automate it somewhat.
But macros came to the rescue.
But yeah, we noticed that the place template command has just at the end of it a value spot where you can put the integrity in as a float between 0 and 1,
and then all you got to do is do a little bit of maths to calculate the player's position, how far along the they are along the city and macro.
Yeah, just calculate the percentage they've traveled of the distance, and then convert that into a number between 0 and 1, and divide it by 100. Or in this case, using the execute store to scale it down, or data modify, one or the other. And then macro, boom, done. And after we worked out that place had the integrity value, that effect was implemented in about 20 minutes. It was...
Yeah.
It was just this classic case of, a cool idea, and then Minecraft just came in clutch with just the features that we needed.
Yeah.
And it's like, we probably wouldn't have been able to do that effect a year ago. Not nearly as well. Yeah.
Well, yeah, unless we'd done, like, some weird, like, string manipulation thing with the command block and stuff, but...
Or, like, hard-code really all the frames.
Or hard-code it, exactly. So that is, that's sort of a summary of all the different features we added in the data pack. I'm just thinking, right?
Yep.
We've already been going, I'm not sure exactly how long, but I think it's over an hour now.
Yeah, we've been going for, just a little bit over an hour.
And I have still a lot of stuff I want to talk about on this topic. So I'm thinking maybe we split this into two episodes.
Yeah, I'll be down for that.
I think we could end here. We sort of covered all the features that we worked on, and the next time we can dive into maybe a bit more into the actual development process. Especially, I want to recount a bit the last couple of days because that was an interesting thing. And then we can talk about, the secret thing which we technically teased last episode, but I guess we're gonna have to postpone it to keep people
Yeah.
hooked for longer or something. Otherwise this episode's gonna be like 3 hours long, and nobody's gonna want to listen to that.
We've got so much to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make sure to
So
tune
I
in next
guess
time for
yeah,
part two.
part two. Cool. I think that will be fun. I still have lots to lot many thoughts on the subject, let's
Yeah,
say.
definitely.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I guess we'll end it here and see you in part two next time.